This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. The federal government will move to apply an R18 plus rating to all video games that contain simulated gambling in a proposal targeted at popular casino-style games. The Communications Minister, Michelle Rowland, also says games with paid loot boxes, which are virtual rewards bought with real money, should be rated M for mature audiences. Casey Briggs prepared this report.
This may sound like the Pokies, but it's not. It's a game downloaded for free from a mobile app store. And while you can buy coins in-game to play with, you can never cash out. The jackpots pay out only in virtual coins, meaning this is regulated as a video game. This is the world of social casinos, and it's a multi-billion dollar industry, dominated by some of the world's biggest gambling companies. Nick Fisher is a gambling counsellor with Wesley Mission.
Gambling has been around for a very long time and will continue to be. This is the next form of it. This is the next era.
An increasing number of people playing these games are seeking help.
I had one client in particular, and she'd been gambling for got to be 25 years at this point. She's migrated from poker machines onto social casino gaming. This particular person, who initially was only spending sort of $50 to $100 a week, advanced to probably $200 or $300 a week.
Associate Professor Alex Russell is from Central Queensland University.
We do know that a lot of the same people who do monetary gambling, so play real pokies, also play, you know, social casino games, for example. But it's not clear which one they're doing first necessarily. But what is really clear is that these products appeal to the same people who take part in gambling anyway.
In a statement, the International Social Games Association insists there's no causal evidence that social casino games encourage people of any age into real money gambling. But the federal government wants to limit children from playing them. Communications Minister Michelle Rowland's seeking agreement from states and territories to apply an R18 plus rating to any game with simulated gambling.
Research undertaken by my own department indicates that simulated gambling within games certainly does have a link between real world, online and other harms, and that it's important that our classification scheme appropriately respond to that.
That rating would apply not just to casino games, but to any game with any element of gambling.
That is the clearest indication that we can give not only to consumers, but also to industry.
The government will also seek to have games with loot boxes where you can pay for a randomised in-game item attract a minimum M rating for mature audiences. That'll affect games like the hugely successful FIFA franchise.
And he's through here. Oh, and a goal from Christie!
Some gambling advocates want to go further with spending limits and warning messages on these casino-style games, even an outright ban. The proposal will now go out for consultation.
Casey Briggs reporting there. The Albanese government is under pressure to create a powerful new umpire to resolve disputes with digital platforms like Facebook. Yesterday, you might have heard our report about how scammers are impersonating businesses selling shipping containers and how the pages were only taken down after the ABC contacted Facebook. Now, the telecommunications industry ombudsman says she should be given the power to force companies to act. National Consumer Affairs reporter Michael Atkin explains.
At Kelly Hull's shipping container yard in Brisbane, scam victims were once turning up almost every day.
At the time, our street number was 1517 and these guys had claimed that they were 1519, which actually doesn't exist. However, if you Google 1519, it will take you straight to 1517 where it looks like there was a container park.
She estimates at least 20 fake shipping container companies fraudulently used their location online. And there were two Facebook pages imitating her company, ABC Shipping Containers.
They are using our photos. It's really quite scary how legitimate these Facebook pages look compared to ours.
The pages were taken down by Facebook's owner Meta after the ABC contacted them this week. The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission estimates that in the last year, Australians have handed over more than $21 million to scams on social networking sites. The Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman Cynthia Gabert says her office, which deals with complaints about telcos and internet providers, is often contacted for help, but there's little she can do.
Customers just feel like they're hitting a brick wall. At this point, there's a limited amount that we could do, and this is really the opportunity to improve consumer protections and build trust and confidence.
She wants the federal government to give her responsibility for digital platforms to resolve complaints about scams and locked accounts.
We would like to see this gap filled. You know, it is a black hole, and we'd like to see it filled as soon as possible. We're the right place, the most cost-effective, most experienced, and we'll be able to get it up and running in a more timely manner than any other organisation.
Professor Derek Wilding from the University of Technology Sydney says it'd be a world first if an ombudsman was given this sort of power over a digital platform. But he says if it happens, then the ombudsman should have the power to award compensation to consumers.
The ombudsman needs to have the power to actually make a finding about what should happen and whether the provider should offer some kind of remedy, for example, reconnecting a service or correcting something or providing some kind of financial compensation if that's appropriate.
The Communications Alliance, whose members include Facebook, Apple and TikTok, says disputes about content removal would be difficult to resolve through mandatory rules and that industry self-regulation should be allowed. The federal government has been doing some consultation about this issue and is considering its response.
Michael Atkin reporting there. In the lead up to last week's New South Wales election, one political party was able to use its Centrelink status to recruit volunteers. Legalised Cannabis New South Wales promoted online that as a Centrelink-approved voluntary organisation, job seekers could fulfil mutual obligation requirements by volunteering for the party during the campaign. The federal government says that designation was a mistake, but advocates believe it raises questions about how the mutual obligation system is administered. Social affairs correspondent Norman Hermont has more.
Making do on the Centrelink single parenting payment isn't easy for Jess in Sydney. She's on the job hunt, and earlier this month, an ad forwarded by a friend caught her eye. It stated people needing to earn points for their mutual obligations could accrue them by volunteering to work for a political party.
My immediate thought was, how have they cleared that with Centrelink? How has a political party got the approval for what is essentially free labour?
The party was Legalised Cannabis New South Wales. On the Seek Volunteer website and its Facebook group page, the party promoted it was a Centrelink-approved voluntary organisation. It said volunteers could distribute pamphlets or man polling booths in the New South Wales election, activities that would help people continue to receive their welfare payment.
Well, it smells to me, you know what I mean? Like, there's something smelly about the government getting involved in political parties using the mutual obligation scheme to bolster their staff.
Last week, after inquiries from the ABC, the federal government agency responsible for administering mutual obligations conceded a mistake had been made. A spokesperson from Services Australia said, "Legalised Cannabis New South Wales does not meet its policy and should not have been approved. This was the result of human error." The agency said an investigation is underway and Legalised Cannabis New South Wales has been removed as an approved voluntary organisation. Kristen O'Connell from the Anti-Poverty Centre said it's another example of the flaws in the mutual obligations system.
I think it shows that Centrelink is really failing to exercise oversight, and it's alarming to think about the types of organisations that might be targeting people on Centrelink payments for free labour like this.
Legalised Cannabis New South Wales had approved voluntary status for about 3 weeks, and only a very small number of people subject to mutual obligations volunteered. The party captured nearly 4% of the vote for the state's upper house, the Legislative Council, and looks set to win a seat. Despite multiple attempts to contact party officials and its lead upper house candidate, Legalise Cannabis New South Wales did not respond to inquiries from the ABC. Finding out what other organisations are on the approved voluntary list is impossible. The ABC understands the list is not publicly available.
That report from Norman Hermon and Evan Young. The latest inflation figures are due out today, and millions of Australians will be hoping for signs of some much-needed relief from the high cost of living. The data will also help shape the Reserve Bank's decision next week on whether or not to pause interest rate rises after 10 straight increases. Matt Bamford reports.
On this construction site in Sydney's inner west, builder Ben Deegan surveys the shell of what will become a four-bedroom home.
Yeah, it's a two-storey residential construction.
From the raw materials waiting to be assembled to the subcontractors hammering away, all of it has become more expensive.
Key ones would be the structural timbers. The price increase there has been up around 30%. So that's really affected the budget. The other big one was bricklayers. Bringing that trade in, it was very difficult to get them. And the pricing was basically, they wouldn't give me a lump sum price. It was purely a daily rate and a very high daily rate.
And it's not just at work where Ben Deegan has taken a hit to his hip pocket.
Every time I go to the shops and grocery shopping, it's just crazy. I go in there and, you know, expect to spend $30 and you walk out spending $80, you know, just a little light shop for the week. I've got a mortgage and, definitely can see the rates have gone up.
In December, inflation hit a 30-year high. And while it's eased slightly to 7.4%, there's not expected to be much more of a dip when February's figure is out today. Ben Deegan is just hoping that the cost of living goes down.
Just get some stability again. Yeah, like I say, in supply, it'd be great to get that stability and labour.
Dr. Angela Jackson is an economist from Impact Economics.
What we'll be looking for really is what's happening with goods inflation, which was driving inflation last year but has started to come off, and what's happening with services inflation, which has become the growing concern for the Reserve Bank.
Do you think we're getting to the end of these price pressures?
I think certainly in terms of the price of goods, I expect to see those pressures continuing to come off as those supply side pressures ease globally. But in terms of services, we have certainly seen, you know, over the last few months, increasing inflationary pressures.
And Dr. Jackson says it'll be a long time before it falls to the Reserve Bank's target of 2-3%.
I think we will hopefully continue to see a downward trajectory, which is obviously what we want to see. But the expectation here is that, you know, inflation will remain above target, certainly through this year and probably well into next year.
It's a challenge the federal government will be grappling with as it prepares to hand down its May budget.
The important thing here is that the government is really targeted in its support at those that need it most, and also doesn't look towards one-off payments, but rather looks at those weekly payments, because again, they will be less inflationary than those one-off payments that tend to stimulate demand more.
Economist Dr. Angela Jackson ending Matt Bamford's report. After dramatic protests and a mass strike in Israel, the country's president has agreed to host talks between the government and opposition to try and solve the crisis. At the heart of the unrest is Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's now suspended plan to overhaul the country's judicial system. Our Middle East correspondent Tom Joyner reports from Jerusalem.
After months of unrest, for a moment it looked like things were coming to a dramatic finale. Hundreds of thousands of protesters on the streets of Israeli cities, and a prime minister seemingly on the back foot. But now there's an uneasy relative calm as Israelis absorb Benjamin Netanyahu's promise to put his controversial overhaul of the judicial system on hold.
So it's just buying time, trying to divide the protesters.
Professor Menachem Klein is an expert on Israeli politics at Bar-Ilan University. Israel's president is going to host talks between rival political factions on a potential compromise to the government's plan to give itself the ability to appoint judges to the Supreme Court and to allow parliament to overturn the court's decisions. But Professor Klein says it's unlikely any of those discussions will get very far.
They don't want to give up any principle, so it will be very difficult to find the common ground from Netanyahu's perspective, is purely tactics.
And Professor Klein believes, regardless of the outcome, the last few months of unrest have deepened an ideological divide within Israel.
It's not, you know, we are going back to business as usual. We are in a constant cold civil war. Yeah, here we have two camps. There is a conservative. They want that the Jewishness of the state overrides its democratic foundations. The protesters or the opposition, they want to achieve some kind of equilibrium between Jewishness and democracy.
At the heart of it all is the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, a political veteran on trial for corruption. Anshel Pfeffer is an Israeli columnist and a biographer of Mr. Netanyahu. He suggests the Prime Minister has backed himself into a political corner.
Well, Netanyahu is in a lose-lose situation now because he allowed himself to be manoeuvred into pushing a policy which he himself wasn't necessarily that excited about. It's a policy which put him on a collision course with a large part of Israeli society.
In Israeli politics, after five elections in 4 years, there are no guarantees, and fortunes can change overnight. For now, the protests are subsiding, but the ceasefire hasn't ended the political and social battle over Israel's identity. This is Tom Joyner in Jerusalem, reporting for AM.
Three years ago, one of the most remote primary schools in Australia had just three students, and parents were worried about whether it could stay open. So the tiny community of Stonehenge near Longreach in far western Queensland decided to start a school bus service to get the kids who were studying online at properties out of town to come into the classroom. And as Danielle O'Neill reports, it's worked.
Good morning, girls. How are we today, Mila, Ruby and Mum?
It's 7 o'clock and school bus driver Deb Porter is picking up kids on a 2-hour-long trip to one of the most remote primary schools in Australia, in the town Stonehenge, population of 44.
We're right to go. OK, kids, all belts on, sitting back.
The daily bus run only started 3 years ago and local dad Mick Campbell admits it was an experiment.
2019, the Stonehenge school had three kids enrolled there. So it was initiated by the principal at the time to run a pilot bus program. There was no guarantees it was going to work.
But it has. Children living on remote stations have switched from online learning to the classroom, and the school now has 17 students.
So valuable. It frees up my time. The kids love it.
Grazier Suzanne Laidler drives her children 30 kilometres down a dirt driveway to meet the bus.
I ask them all the time if they want to come back and me teach them. Hey, Mum, no. They love the interaction. They love it. And we wouldn't be there if the bus run didn't run. I mean, there's no way I would travel 100K either way, you know. So the bus run is vital.
Finding a reliable driver in such a remote area was one of the biggest challenges, until 66-year-old grandmother Deb Porter decided to give it a crack.
My precious cargo. I've called them that ever since I started driving the bus.
And it's a job she loves.
As you're getting older, like mature age as they call us, it's nice to have that feeling that you need it, I guess. It does wonders for yourself and your mental and your well-being.
Parent Mick Campbell says the school bus service has now qualified for a Queensland government subsidy.
I think the bus run and the extra students in there keeping that school alive has kept the town alive as well, and it's created jobs.
Education expert Dr. Tanya Leach from the University of Southern Queensland says it shows the power of community.
So this is significant. It keeps the school functioning and it keeps it viable. But in some communities, a bus run won't save the school. We had examples in some of our mining towns. But the core of it is, when you have communities and schools working together, we really do have equitable access to education.
Back on the bus, it's an approach that these students are happy to celebrate.
Hoo-wah, 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 we Stonehenge winners, can't you see? We'll run and jump against the rest. Win or lose, we'll do our best. S-T-O-N-A.
Students on the Stonehenge school bus there, Danielle O'Neill reporting. That's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast.
This week, the Greens struck a deal with the Albanese government on a bill that's meant to force the big polluters to slash emissions. Today, climate scientist Frank Yotso on how it will work and why it shouldn't mean consumers will pay more. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.